because you hadn't paid off your balance from the previous period. That changed, and now they can't do that any longer. They have to give you the full grace period for all new purchases. And the grace period now has to be at least 21 days. So that's those things are helpful. But in terms of other limits, we haven't got quite as many as the United States, and the ones that are there are mostly related, as you said before, to disclosure of what's going on.
Now, but in terms of these regulation overhauls that we've had in the last couple of years, did we get it? You mentioned that you didn't necessarily get everything that you'd wanted. What additional protections could be put in place in order to protect consumers?
Well, you've got fees that are added for missing payments. You've got fees that are added for insurance, as we spoke about, that are not, I don't think, very well disclosed. What they relate to or why they're being added, this sort of thing. I guess the interest rates that are charged, we always like to think that there should be an interest rate cap or something along that line, but that's very difficult to get by the industry, of course, because they say it's a free market and so on and so forth. But, you know, the interest rates are very high on credit cards, and practices such as when you miss a payment, you know, your fee jumps. Now you have to give notice of that, but just the fact that it does without giving you a chance to cancel the contract, I mean, that's difficult for people because, I mean, it's pretty human to miss one payment once in your life. And if your interest rate's going to jump 8% or 10% on that, you know, that can hit people pretty hard.
Understood. Now, even when people set up a bank account, which one thinks is just a place where one puts one's money, there are fees that one incurs on a regular basis by using those services if you're not careful. For example, if your card has a limit on the number of debit transactions you can use in a certain month. But the one that really seemed to get people a couple of years back was the fees charged by automatic banking machines or ABMs in order to withdraw money from a banking machine that's not associated with your bank.
Yeah. So
can you tell us a little bit about how much are banks allowed to charge in order to have people use their banking machines if you're not with them?
Oh, well, there's no particular limit on that. That's what the market will bear. And at the moment, I think it's running in the sort of $1.25 to $2.50 kind of range.
What's the justification for that exactly?
That's a good one. Well, apparently there are some costs with, you know, if you are using another company's actual bank machine, I guess. Somebody's got to go fill it up, and they've got to keep track of all the transactions, and there's a bit of computer time. But you have to realize that Interac, which is what most of the banks use to clear that sort of stuff, already charges fees. And also your bank, most likely in your banking agreement, will give you a few transactions every month free. But if you go over them, it will start charging you for electronic banking, which includes service through ABM, so they're making money there. So they've covered it 2, 3, 4 ways. So I think it's insult to injury to ask you to pay for a system that they all participate in, which is Interac, and they all benefit from, and yet, you know, just because you're going to the wrong label on the outside, you're getting this extra fee. And if you're taking out $20, you know, $1.25 on $20 is a lot of money.
Agreed. Now, I'm going to switch topics over a little bit to payday loans, which even Julie expressed some reservations about the practices used in payday loan services. What kinds of regulations are there on such services in terms of how much interest they can charge you in when getting an advance on your next paycheck, for example?
Well, with payday loans, we've recently had the federal government step back from regulating them on interest, and they've let the provinces set an interest rate, constitutional or not, we don't know yet. But anyway, they have in Ontario set a rate of $21 every $100. It's not 21%; it's $21 on 100. So if you take out $300, you pay them back $363 in 2 weeks' time. If you do the math on that, you're looking at 700% annually. They're supposed to disclose that amount of interest somewhere in their contract. They're supposed to give you a copy of the contract. But that really doesn't change the fact that that's a very expensive form of short-term credit. And, you know, it's something to avoid if you can at all avoid it.
I see. The Council or say Public Interest Advocacy Center advocating for any kinds of reforms of the payday loan program?
Well, we are trying to find resources to go to hearings where the provinces set the interest rate, because we find that there's a big variation in Canada. You've got Manitoba that has $17 on 100, and you've got Nova Scotia that has $31 on 100, which is so high I can't even find words to express it. If there were better consumer representation at the hearings where these utility boards set the rate, I think you'd get a lower rate. In Manitoba, you had good representation from a consumer group there, and they ended up with the much more, just slightly more affordable rate. And in Nova Scotia, that didn't happen, and you see what you get. We're hopeful that at some point the federal government will say, you know, we're going to take this interest rate stuff back federally and set a rate that's much more affordable. But we're a long way from there.
I see. Was there anything else you wanted to add, John?
Just in terms of students using credit cards, I'd just be wary of signing up for a credit card on campus. Tends to be cards that are being pushed at students that have not the best terms. I'd shop around first, and if you do get a credit card, pay it off if you can every month, and keep it to one or two cards max.
Sounds like good advice. Thank you so much for your time, John.
Thank you very much.
John Lawford is counsel for the Public Interest Advocacy Center, a consumer advocacy group in Ottawa, and we reached him in Ottawa. Following on the theme of money, I have one of my favorite songs by ABBA. Yeah, because I'm going to be silly today. This is from their greatest hits collection. This is Money, Money, Money.
Tuned in to Silver Screen Dream Machine. Sorry for the late start. We had a bit of a confusion in the studio with programming, but we have an exciting interview that we just made with Scott McGovern down at EdVideo. There's a show there happening right now called Accidentally Perfect, and we got a chance to catch up with Scott earlier, so we're going to run that interview for you right now. And the show is running from it's been on since September 16th to October 8th, and there's an opening reception for it tonight at EdVideo, and that's on Baker Street by Thomas Video, and EdVideo is by Thomas Video, and you can go in for the reception tonight. I believe it starts at 7 and goes until 10. Scott will remind you of that in the interview. And also, there's a talk tomorrow with the artists who ran the show, or who set up the show, and with the curator. And Scott will be there as well to field questions and talk about the show that is on there. And it is a very interesting show indeed. So here is the interview with Scott.
This Silver Screen Dream Machine. I'm down here at Ed Video with Scott McGovern, and we're talking about the Accidentally Perfect show that has opened up here on September 16th, was it?
Yes, it was, and it runs until October 8th.
Wow, that is lots of time for people to still come in and check it out, and it's one of the most interesting shows I've seen in here. Well, all the shows in here in the past while have been really neat, but why don't you start explain to us what is going on here?
All right. This exhibit is called Accidentally Perfect, and I had a lot of help from a curator named Sophia Juase Lin, and it features the art of two different artists, Jeff Winch and Stan Krasinowski. The idea of the show is that it's meant to showcase artists who have an ability to see perfection in our world, often in like overlooked places, both in nature and in culture. And features some video installation, some large photography, a lot of stop motion animated video, and as well sort of the biggest piece in it is this large pine cone wall with about 1,000 pine cones and a grid on the gallery wall.
Let's hear more about the pine cone wall. What's the story with the pine cone wall?
Yeah, it's a really fascinating installation. The artist, who's Stan Krasinowski, who's traditionally more like a woodworker, has been working with pine cones a lot in the last few years, in particular with their the way they can change shape depending on their moisture content.
Okay.
So what's happening is there's this huge grid of pine cones, and each day the gallery attendant, or me, or his son Patrick, who's a student at University of Guelph, comes in here and we make patterns out of this grid. And each pine cone's held onto the wall with a rare earth magnet. And so we can pop them off, we soak them in hot water for a few minutes, and then reapply them to the wall. And what happens is that when the pine cone gets wet, it closes, it contracts.
Right.
And as it dries out, it kind of blooms or opens up again. So patterns are made on the wall with these pine cones, depending on whether they're wet or not.
Yeah, because I saw there's a video of it on one of the screens in here, and I noticed patterns. I didn't know what was happening, but that must have been what was happening. Were they already, but that looked like before they had even been installed, maybe, or it must have been afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's, yeah, we have.
As they were being installed, maybe.
Stan is also an expert at hacking point and shoot cameras. He writes his own firmware for them, and then he can set them up to do whatever he wants. So he has some of these cameras permanently mounted in here, and they're taking pictures of the wall every 5 minutes. And then he makes animations out of this wall changing. So a whole day of the pine cones changing will get compressed down to 5 or 10 seconds.
And the pine cones get rearranged and put in water every day, or?
Yeah, about every day. It takes about 24 to 30 hours for the whole process to happen. It takes 3 or 4 hours for the pine cones to close once they're soaked, and then it takes 15 or 20 hours for them to fully bloom again. So about every day.
Do they go right back on the wall after they've been soaked, or do you wait to put them back on?
I wait a minute or two just to so that the water sort of
drips off
because I don't want the water to drip down and hit the dry pine cones.
Right. Okay.
So I have a big bucket, and I dump them in, and then I have a big strainer, and I strain them out, and then reapply them to the wall.
Cool. And it's going to go for the duration of the exhibit?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, we've already got about a week of animations done. That'll be featured tonight at the opening from 7 till 10 p.m., and then each day there'll be a new pattern, and then over the 3 weeks of the show, there'll be about 20 different patterns created. And he puts all his video work on his website, and I'm hoping to put it on Ed Video's website as well.
It's really interesting because it creates not only just the shape of the pine cones, but also the shadows behind.
Yeah,
get changed, and it creates a interesting image. The one that I saw, it looked like there was a diagonal line coming from one of the top corners, sort of straight down to the other corner, and I didn't know how that had happened because I was just confused about how it went from not being there to being there, but now it all makes sense.
Well, I didn't even know before this exhibit that pine cones exhibit this trait. I had no idea that.
I wasn't aware of that either.
And I think that's what's kind of the magic of the pine cone wall, is that people are used to seeing pine cones both closed up and open.
Yeah.
But they don't really think about why that works or the difference between them.
I wonder why they close up when they're wet.
I believe they're trying to retain their seeds. And it's nature's way of saying, well, when it dries out, that's the right time to release the seeds.
Right time to start the next generation.
As well as, like, you know, I've learned that some pine cones, when they're exposed to heat, they'll also open up.
Oh, okay. The greener ones that are not quite dried out yet.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, someone was telling me when they were a kid, they put the pine cone in a microwave. I can watch it bloom in the microwave, and other people are talking about how, you know, forest fires actually stimulate pine cone growth because the heat opens the cones.
Right. I've heard that forest fires can create new chance for new trees. That must be one of the ways that happens. Wow, so the pine cone wall is definitely a highlight of this opening, but there's also a number of other things going on. What is the story with the four videos with different points from around, you said Toronto?
That's right. It's called We All See the Same Clouds. And again, it's using this hacked point-and-shoot camera technology to take really long time-lapse video, but using photography. And what, again, Stan has done is set up four different cameras like this in different places in Toronto and had them running for an entire day, so from before dawn until after dusk. And then each animation has been configured in a grid, and ultimately what you see is the same clouds passing through, the same weather patterns, and the same look to the sky, although they're taken from different places in Toronto.
It was an interesting day to have it done, so it looks like it went from sunny to cloudy to slightly rainy all throughout the same 24-hour period. I wonder if he took multiple days, or do you think he just got lucky with the day that he chose?
I think he just got lucky and happened to pick a day with varying cloud patterns and weather patterns.
And what is the next thing going around the room counterclockwise? We have this white stand with a button on top of it, with a screen that when you press the button, it changes to a camera that's behind you, and you see multiple layers of yourself reflected in the camera view.
Yeah, yep, that's by the other artist in the show, Jeff Winch, and it's called Always Wanting What I Do Not Have. And it's a very simple video installation, but very, you know, elegant in a way. So yeah, like you said, there's a live camera shooting onto a plinth with a button, and as well that signal's projected behind on the wall. So there's a video feedback loop where there's an infinity loop happening of what you're seeing. And it's very simple, but just if the viewer is there, they'll see themselves live in this feedback loop, but when they hit the button, it switches to a pre-recorded signal without anyone in there,
so they
literally vanish out of the picture until they hit the button and reappear again.
It's a fun, interactive installation. And is he the one with the pictures further around left?
Yes, that's true. There's two large photographs printed and framed about 3 feet by 4 feet. And it's part of a series that Jeff's been working on for some time called Capital. And this series shows sort of banal North American-style living rooms full of, you know, typical furnishings and fixtures, IKEA furniture, that sort of thing. Nice living rooms, but in every photo there's always the flat screen television mounted on the wall with, well, basically horrific imagery coming through into this perfect little living room. So one of them has images of dead children from a war, and the other one shows a bullfighting scene. Other ones in the series have violent video game imagery, pornography, different things like that. And it's sort of about this idea that we construct our our own little worlds, and but we allow this glimpse into the reality of the world, but it's all safe and mediated by our design of how we allow ourselves to consume it. But also, you know, it's kind of a jarring thing to see these, you know, perfect little living rooms, you know, but you know, this horrible imagery is permitted to come through.
Yeah, the bull fighting picture has blood dripping off the javelin or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
The bullfighter is using
the picador's sword.
Pretty striking imagery. And what do we have on these screens here? There's two other screens other than the one showing the pine cone wall.
Yeah, those are called HTML decay pieces, again by Stan. And another thing that he's interested in is the way browsers handle information. So what he's done is made quite a complex grid of videos with sound attached that all play in a browser, an internet browser like Firefox or Safari. But by design, that it's made to choke the browser and the capabilities of any computer. So what inevitably happens is that the videos in the grid start to go out of sync because they can't play all at the same time. They sort of find their own random rhythm. And there's one button on each plinth where you can refresh the page.
Mm.
See it start again. So one is a little bit more visual. It's a lathe plate spinning, and one is a little bit more audio, featuring piano notes.
Okay, and there's headphones set up with the display as well.
Yes.
And there's a book covering this opening.
Yeah.
That you guys put out on your press publishing label.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes for shows that are more involved, like this one, at a video, we make catalogs to sort of commemorate them.
There was a Y on the pinecone wall, I just noticed.
Yes.
Somewhere in there, there was like a Y created. Sorry to interrupt.
Some of the other patterns we've done are grids.
So do you consciously sort of create the pattern ahead of time in the way that you arrange the wet ones versus the dry ones?
Yeah, what seems to work best are patterns that are blocky, like big chunks of pine cones, instead of,
right,
you know, treating them like video pixels.
Right.
It seems more dramatic to do big swashes of wet pine cones to make the patterns more obvious.
Yeah. I was just thinking how many pine cones you'd need to do some kind of like crazy mosaic of somebody's face or something.
You could. One idea I have is I have a map of the grid, and I keep toying with the idea of next week posting it on certain websites I use and see if people on the internet want to suggest patterns and to get some more promotion for the show, but to see what other people can think of that might be interesting patterns as well.
And back to the book that you guys put out. You guys put out another one for a show that was recently as well. How do people? What's the best way for them to get these?
Some of them are, well, they're all available at EdVideo. They are quite expensive to print, so we do charge money for them. As well as we try to make them, you know, collectible. So sometimes they're in limited editions and they're numbered and it's signed by the artists and the people involved. Sometimes they have original prints tipped into them. But we also distribute them through other places that deal with art publications, like Art Metropole and Toronto and places with an interest in art objects like that.
And does it cover both the artists of this show?
That's right. The catalog for this show is quite interesting. It's pretty good documentation of the show, but also the curator, Sophia, spent a lot of time gathering interviews with the artists, trying to really get to the essence of what their practice is all about, as well as that she's also commissioned some poets and prose writers to augment the ideas of the show with short poems, also illustrations. So it's quite a creative and interesting book, about 80 pages long. And it's meant to, you know, help to celebrate the show and preserve the idea of it for the future, as well as, you know, the artists really enjoy having catalogs made of the shows they're in. It's very, you know, good for their careers and useful for them as well. And also for Ed Video, it makes, you know, it's a good step for Ed Video, I think, to start publishing these very professional looking catalogs to show that we're not just your little Guelph grassroots artists run center, although we are. We are presenting some very high caliber exhibitions, as good as any gallery really in Canada.
Certainly. Well, I've been to lots of galleries in bigger cities that have had worse shows than what you guys put on here. So
awesome.
You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you, Chad. Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up. You've been listening to Scott McGovern talk about Accidentally Perfect, which is happening right now at Ed Video, and you said it's spanning from September 16th to October 8th, did you say?
That's right, and tonight, September 24th, the opening reception from 7 till 10. Come down, you meet the curator and the artists, and we'll have some delicious beer courtesy of Wellington Brewery as well. Tomorrow from 2 until 4, if you want to, you know, learn a lot more about the show and sort of geek out a little bit, there'll be artists and curator talks. And the artists are not going to be shy about getting into how they do this stuff technically, in particular the hacked point-and-shoot cameras.
And yeah, that's a really interesting element of this show.
And this is all part of Culture Days, the new initiative in Canada to have cultural events this weekend. There's about 4,500 different events happening for Culture Days across Canada.
Wow. And where are these two artists based out of?
They're both based out of Toronto, as is the curator, Sophia, who's based in Toronto and Shanghai.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for joining us today on Silver Screen Dream Machine, and we'll be by to talk to you soon about whatever you get up to next.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
That was Scott McGovern from Ed Video, and please check out the Accidentally Perfect show that's happening there right now. It is a really amazing show. The Pinecone Wall is very fascinating and interesting. We're going to go with an Electrified Voltage request here. My co-host Electrified Voltage is in the studio with me, and this is Adrian Rasso from Clean Up the Mess. This is going to be all the time we have for on the show today. Thank you for tuning in, and catch us next week with more film, cinema, and visual related coverage. Here is Lonely Constellation by Adrian Rasso on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Keep it locked.